All right, welcome. That's another episode of the Making Sense podcast, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. Now, this was originally a live session on the old YouTube. That went ahead on Tuesday night. It was a great time, a fun time. Took some questions from you guys, had a bit of fun bounce back and forth, but there were some technical hitches. Thank you very much for everyone who tuned in and stuck with me. It's the first time we've run into technical issues, which, considering that I'm a bit of a Luddite, to be honest, for someone who's made a career in the new digital world, I'm such a Luddite. So it's a bit of a surprise that this is the first time we've run into technical issues on the old live sessions. But yeah, ran into some technical issues on the night, which meant that the audio download has been just frankly a nightmare. And I like to make sure that anything I put on the YouTube is on the podcast as well, that nobody misses out. So I am just re-recording this for you so that you will still get the good stuff. So before we get into it, don't forget, of course, this is general information, not individual financial advice. And it is also slightly different from a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this podcast, because, look, I think doing an episode on mood boards is not something I would usually expect from me. I think of myself as a fairly logical girl. That's probably how I ended up in the money world, to be honest, because life gets hard. What's a lever we can pull to make it easier? A stable financial base. And money is lovely. It's all dollars and cents and numbers and facts over feelings. Get on with things and get things sorted. Here's the thing, though. One fact that doesn't really care about my feelings on getting into wishy-washy woo methods is that a mood board really works. If you have a big financial goal that you are struggling with, you probably need a mood board. Seriously. Now, you might, as I do, associate mood boards with Pinterest, dream weddings, maybe a holiday or two. But if you use them the right way, they are also rocket fuel for serious financial goals. Now, here's why. If being good with money, whatever that means, if being good with money was as simple as just doing what we know we need to do, 90% of us would already be doing better than we are. Spend less than you earn, save some every week, don't panic sell your KiwiSaver. None of that is breaking news. It's been covered endlessly by myself, by others, yet many of us still don't do it. I struggle to do it for various reasons, big and small. And why don't we do it? Because yes, life is hard and it is expensive. Yes, budgets are tight. But most of us could at least be saving $5 a week regularly. Many of us could be doing more than that. Even the small amounts that we could save, many of us don't. Now, a few episodes back on the podcast, I brought in financial psychologist Dr. Brad Klontz, and I love his work. It was quite funny when I managed to track him down to come on the podcast because I was a little bit of a fangirl. I'd already quoted his work in my second book, for those of you who've read it. I'd already read his work, loved it, cited it in my book. And then I tracked him down and said, would you actually come on my podcast? And he said, yes. So you should listen to that episode. I loved it. He's a fascinating man. He's got masses of research. He's been doing this for years. He's looked into why many of us don't do the little things that we know we should. One of the reasons is simply down to the way our brains are wired. Now, in his research and his writing, he points out we evolved to survive, not to save. Our caveman brains are built to grab opportunities in the moment, not squirrel away resources for a retirement that's 30 years away. Long-term thinking takes effort. Delayed gratification does not come naturally. When our brains were being forged, that was not the priority. The priority was surviving now. And if you got 20 years in the future, good for you. But that was by no means guaranteed. So you've got that our brains are really, really focused and deeply wired to think about now, not later. Then you add to that our personal history with money, such as how we grew up, what we saw our parents doing or not doing, the cultural scripts that we absorbed. And these combine to create some really deep grooves carved into the way that we approach financial decisions. If you have ever self-sabotaged a good savings streak by suddenly treating yourself into overdraft and then finding out you're actually deeply stressed instead, but that's, you know, by the by, you'll know what I mean. The problem often isn't knowledge, it's motivation. And this is where the humble mood board comes in. Now, I know the financial world doesn't usually get emotional or into the glue sticks like this, but that is part of the problem. The financial world likes charts and interest rates and acronyms, but if you're trying to actually change your financial life, not just read about it, that cold clinical approach actually won't get you very far. We are wired to respond to emotion and imagery and storytelling, not a spreadsheet. That's exactly why a mood board works. It's working with our wiring instead of against it. Now, Brad told me about a study he ran where participants either got standard financial education or were asked to do something that sounds a little bit woo. They visualized their goals and connected them to their values and literally created mood boards. I'm talking scissors, glue sticks, the whole lot. And the result was a 73% increase in savings among the mood board crew. Say that again. 73% higher savings for people who did the mood board compared to the people who were given good, standard financial education. Nothing wrong with it. It's just that they weren't going to do it. And the people who did do it, the mood board team, they didn't do it because they suddenly had more money. They just finally had a why. They could see their goals, they could picture them, and they could emotionally connect with them. That's the whole point here. If your savings goal is just a number in a spreadsheet, you'll probably ditch it the moment a new iPhone drops. Nobody saves because they should, or to be good, or because some financial expert tells them that they should. You'll last 2 weeks max if that's your motivation. But if your savings account is literally called Freedom Fund to Leave My Toxic Job, well, you're going to think twice before you raid it for a midweek Uber Eats because you've just given your brain a vivid, desirable, real future to chase. And that makes the present much easier to manage. If you want to quit splurging on sneakers and save more, you're not just saying, I should be responsible, I guess. You are actively choosing something that you want. You're choosing the beachfront batch or the sabbatical or the freedom to walk away from a terrible job. You're not just saying don't spend, you're choosing to make bigger plans and go for them. You're not depriving yourself, you're moving towards something and towards something that feels real. So here's a really simple way to stick with a goal. Say it's that you want to save more money. It needs to be real. It needs to be something you are doing, not something you're cutting out. And this is why things like naming your savings account matters. Call it House in Hawke's Bay or FU Fund, not just savings. Put a picture of the goal in your phone background. Tape it to the fridge. Open your online banking. Rename your automatic transfers so that they shout your intentions right back at you. Start with what feels good. What would you feel excited to wake up to? What would you do if money wasn't a barrier to what you want from your life? That is where your real goals live, right? You're making it real. You're making it visual. You're making it so that you see it at multiple times throughout your day, and you're reminding yourself and you're turning it into a reality. So on a surface level, this mood board thing, it feels frivolous. But if you scratch the surface and you look at the lesson behind it, it's anything but. You are building the emotional fuel that will power consistent, unsexy habits like budgeting and automating your savings. This is your money's why. It's how you keep going when it gets boring or hard or uncertain out there. This is how you keep it going. This is how you make it real. So you've got naming things or pictures or whatever, putting those reminders all throughout your day, wherever you can. After that, automation is part two of the trick. Once you've got the vision, make it effortless. Once you've got your account named Coffee in Paris, set up an auto payment into it for the day after you get paid. So the money just straight in there. Then when temptation hits, because it will, temptation always arrives. When that temptation hits, you've already made the good decision ahead of time. The money is moving without you. You're still allowed to want nice things in the moment, but you've also made space for future you to have something even better. You can't always change your income overnight. I know that. Or control whatever the Reserve Bank does next. Boof, boy, do we know that one. But you can get clear on what you want. You can break it into tiny, doable steps and use every psychological hack at your disposal to make progress feel real. That's what a mood board does. It flips the script from vague overwhelm to specific ambition, specific, real, and something you want. It shows your brain exactly why it's worth it. So, we're going to rip into some of the psychology behind this, because again, this sounds woo, there's science behind it. We like ourselves some science. So a bit of the psychology behind this, right? First up, visualizing your future self enhances the saving behavior. We've got a whole bunch of studies that show individuals who vividly imagine their future self more likely to make good financial decisions. One study even used immersive virtual reality to let the participants engage with the age-progressed version of themselves. So I'm talking like an avatar of themselves looking older. And they had the goggles on, you know, the little handhelds, whatever. They're interacting with themselves looking old in virtual reality. And afterwards, the people who took part in that study, more likely to avoid impulse spending and save for retirement instead, because suddenly the idea of getting older and wanting a good life in their golden years was real to them. And they were willing to do what was needed to look after their future self. Now, the smart academics call this future self-continuity, which means that when we feel a strong connection to our future selves, we're more motivated to make decisions that benefit us in the long term. But also, I don't know, if you're on TikTok and you've seen some of those aging filters or you've seen other people use them, look at their faces when they see themselves as an old person and suddenly it's way more real to them that one day they're going to be old. And don't you want to have a good life then? Literally putting aside $10, letting it grow, and it can grow into $100 by the time you're old and you want it to because you want a good life. For a very small sacrifice now, you can have such a good life later. Really picture yourself and make it real. Now, the next one, mental accounting. Now, I've talked a lot about naming your accounts on here. What you might not know is that actually, this is a tactic that I have stolen from behavioral economics. And it's even got a fancy name. There's a guy called Richard Taylor or Richard Thaler. I don't know which it is. It's spelt with a T-H, T-H-A-L-E-R. I've only ever seen his name written down, though. Sometimes that's Taylor, sometimes it's Thaler. Anyway, he introduced the concept of mental accounting, which is where you mentally separate the money into different accounts based on different criteria. And we talk about this in my money course too, Money Bootcamp. One of the tactics for managing your money is chunking, which is making as many different bank accounts as you need to have them labeled for different things. But it's particularly powerful for your savings. When you label savings account to have a specific goal, like emergency savings or beach house fund or Thailand or new car because my current one is about to crap out, you create a stronger emotional attachment to the goal. That is what makes it easier to resist impulse spending. Now, I would say if you use the tactic of using multiple bank accounts, don't forget to just look for the ones that are no fee. You can usually get online only no fee bank accounts. That is a really important part of it. But as long as you're doing that, this can be such an easier way to manage your money and to stop the mental overload for absolutely no cost. Now, my third point here, stick with me. You're going to think this is, you're going to think I've gone full woo, but I haven't. Financial mindfulness. Now, look, this just means being present and aware of your financial decisions. You're aiming to recognize emotional triggers and make intentional choices. And I know a lot of places will say, oh, you should have these tracking apps or spreadsheets or whatever. Even just staying aware of how you feel when you spend money or scrolling through your bank account once a night, once a week, once in the evening, whatever. Having a scroll through, having a look, checking in with yourself on how it makes you feel. How are you feeling when you're spending money? How are you feeling when you're saving money? And just being mindfulness and making intentional choices from that, you often start to course correct no matter what. No judgment. Just keeping an eye on things, noticing things, and you start to make better decisions. There is actually masses of research on how this leads to concrete, improved financial results. There was this 2023 study that found people who practiced financial mindfulness had better credit scores and more rational investment choices. So this is huge for your money. Woo, but true. Now, fourth, small habits consistently, that is how you get ahead. If you want to actually stick with your savings goals, break them down into smaller goals on a manageable time frame. Looking at a weekly or a monthly goal, far more likely to succeed than a five-year goal. Remember, I talked about how your brain is wired to be looking at the now, not the later. So if you want something that will take you the 5 years, maybe it's saving up for a house or whatever, then you need to break it down into goals that are achievable now, because that will give you the next step to work towards and you will actually get moving. Of course, the five-year goal is important, but you need to break down the steps to get there and then make them feel as immediate as possible. Now, if you would like, again, another stat to make you feel better about this, this is what's called by our behavioral economics pals a cyclical approach to savings. And it's been shown to result in saving 78% more money than other methods. Breaking it down into the weekly or monthly goals, instead of saying I want to save $100,000 by 5 years' time, I want $2,000 by the end of the year. I want $500 in 2 months. Break it down. And then get moving. Do something this week to get moving towards that goal. Make it now. All right, this is my last one. And again, this one is going to sound really woo, but it's got a whole bunch of science behind it. So please stick with me. Number five is get positive. Being more optimistic is strongly linked to better financial behavior, including what we've already been talking about, like goal setting and long-term savings. Now, why? Because a positive outlook encourages you to do all of that dumb woo stuff that actually works. You are more likely to imagine a successful financial future, and that keeps you motivated to take the steps needed to achieve your goals. And you might be listening to this and say, Francis, that is all well and good for rich people to do positive thinking. The rest of us have to deal with reality. I hear you. I get it. This is actually even more powerful for people on lower incomes. Now, I am not saying you need to just positive think your way out of a pickle. Not what we're saying here. What I am saying is that positive thinking has been found to actually increase resilience, which you really need when times get tough. And it also encourages people to get proactive and take action towards their financial goals. Now, structural problems are real. We all start at different places. Some of us have it way harder than other people. That is all true. I'm not debating it. What is also unfortunately true is that the world is not fair. Nobody is coming to save you. And even when we do need help and a community approach to fixing a problem, you often have to go out there and find that help, find that community yourself, and then do your part within getting that wider help. You will have to move at the same time as getting help from others. And having an optimistic outlook and a positive frame of mind helps you stay mentally strong enough to do the hard work that is required when you're in that sort of situation. When you are genuinely dealing with real problems, you still need that positive mindset to help you pick yourself up off the floor and say, we're going for it anyway. So basically, bottom line, get onto that mood board. Go ahead and print the picture of the house. Cut out the name of the country you want to visit. Write down the dollar amount you would need to take 6 months off work. Whatever it is that makes you get moving, whatever it is that lights you up inside. Make it real, make it visual, and then put it somewhere you'll see it. Whether it's a mood board, whether it's a picture on your phone screen, or naming a savings account after it. This isn't magic. It's neuroscience. And it works. So turn your finances into a vision, not a punishment, and your goals will thank you for it. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say. I know, woo, but true. And if this podcast episode helped you, then for starters, hit subscribe to make sure you never miss a trick with your money, but also send it to a friend so we can all get better with our money together. We can all help each other out, get those little tips and tricks that make life a little easier. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.